she said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover."
Brought to you by Jay Birdie Baseball Company. Get your Canadian baseball apparel at jaybirdie.ca and make sure to follow them on social media. Today we have former NFL quarterback and college baseball player Jabron Hamden. No, awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
I guess first things first, could you talk to us a little bit about what sports looked like for you growing up?
Sure. I kind of was born in San Diego and kind of got introduced to sports a little bit there in terms of the Padres primarily and the Chargers. Although my dad grew up in Palestine, didn't really know anything about sports. And then my mom grew up in Pakistan. She didn't know anything about sports, but I was an American kid and I was on T-ball teams and things like that. But then we moved to Kuwait when I was pretty young. And actually that was my first experience of like organized anything. And that was my dad signing me up for the Kuwait Little League. I started playing baseball while I was in Kuwait, and that was pretty much the majority of my sports stuff growing up as a kid.
And then Red, you represented USA on the 15U national team. Is that correct?
I did. By the time we moved back from Kuwait and I was in, we had settled actually in the DC metro area. I was taking baseball pretty seriously and, obviously was a pretty big kid. I ended up becoming 6'4", 6'5", but at the time, even at 15, I was, I think, 6'2", played a little bit first base and was scouted by a scout that had basically been putting together this team. And we trained at Chavez Ravine in LA for a couple weeks, and it was a group of players from all over the country. And then we went over to Japan and played in that tournament in the Chiba Marine Stadium, actually, right outside of Tokyo.
Yeah. How did you guys do?
We did very poorly. We were very arrogant. We were very arrogant coming in. I don't think we had gelled as a team. And then the teams we were playing at were just like, you know, these kids, those countries had set it up more like a little league system, where those players have been playing together a long time. But, you know, we got our butts handed to us, to be honest. We lost in the opening match of the tournament, the opening game of the tournament to Japan. Then we lost to Cuba, and then we lost to Mexico. It was difficult.
Some pretty good baseball countries right there.
Yeah. We had an interesting draw for sure.
Yeah. I've coached Canada at the Ripken World Series. So it's kind of 13U and just played against Japan a few times and just, their infield outfield is like watching, orchestra. And then we had to do ours afterwards, and it was always, not quite the same.
You know what the funniest thing was, is we had a coach, and he, in true, like, it was, I don't even know what to say about it now, looking back at the age I'm at and having been involved in all kinds of sports at all levels. He wanted to, like, announce our presence with authority, so we took infield and outfield without a ball.
Okay.
For that first game against Japan, like, he pretended to hit us ground balls and we pretended to field them and throw them around. It's like, what are we doing? And then right after us, obviously, just like you're mentioning, the Japanese team comes out and it is like this orchestra. There's like 18 balls at the same time going on. And it's like the most efficient, beautiful thing to watch. I think we all had a sense in the dugout, like, yo, this is going to be not so great. You know, we had a star pitcher, Kyle Backer was his name, or Kyle, it's back Baker, but it was like I think it was either 2 K's or something like that. But anyway, he was tall for a 15-year-old. I mean, he was like 6'4" already or 6'3". Oh, huge wow. Lefty.
Yeah.
You know, threw it hard. But like, honestly, they literally went up for the first couple innings and like fouled off pitches on purpose. Like it was blatant. Like it was literally blatant. Like it was like they were just instructed to foul off as many pitches as possible. And it was as if they had practiced it. And obviously Kyle, there was a pitch limit because it was the eight of that age group. And he was taken out pretty much immediately. So like second inning on, we were in the, you know, the pen, and these guys had done exactly what they wanted, you know?
Yeah. That's the barrel control that some of the Asian players have, it's very impressive. And then, you know, kind of afterwards, like, you know, what did it look like for yourself, like kind of college recruiting wise? And you ended up kind of playing both sports, right? Collegiate wise.
Yeah. The story goes, I was super focused on baseball, had made, you know, the varsity as a freshman and pitched quite a bit. And, but I had been introduced to a football in middle school, literally the ball, because it was the first time I was like, you know, hey, this is what this is, and started playing catch with people. And it really was like second nature to me once I grabbed it. And to the point where everybody was like, wow, you can like really throw a football. And so I started like, I guess, romanticizing about the quarterback position and like fell in love with it. Went out for that same high school team when I first got there and got cut, you know, because the JV football coach was the varsity baseball coach. And of course he wanted me to play fall ball instead of being a backup quarterback on the JV team.
Yeah.
And essentially I transferred and was playing baseball at another school in Virginia. And the senior year, going into senior year, the football coaches would always see me at lunch, like playing football catch, because I just loved throwing the football. And the heir apparent at quarterback there transferred because he didn't like the offense. And so the coaches came to me and said, you know, would you play quarterback this year? Because we could tell you throw. And, you know, I had already had some offers baseball wise. So it was going to be a risk in terms of injury and stuff. But, you know, I said, yeah, let's go for it. And sure enough, I didn't know what I was doing. I was 6'5" at the time. They put me in shotgun. You know, we were a spread offense. And I think I threw like 24 touchdowns and like 27 interceptions. I mean, I literally was just, you know, gripping and ripping. And, you know, I'd never played a football game before. And I was bigger than the offensive lineman we had. But the lucky thing for me was we were playing in a very competitive league in DC that had like schools like DeMatha and Gonzaga that were really heavily recruited by big schools. So whenever they'd come watch DeMatha or anybody, they'd just like happen to run into me or see me playing. So I got some traction football wise. And Indiana was one of the schools that was recruiting me, that had recruited me for baseball, and the football team started recruiting me for football. And then there was a kind of natural synergy there. And the programs, you know, agreed to kind of give me a football scholarship, but allow me to play both when I came. And that's kind of how the college recruiting thing went. So.
Yeah. And then kind of moving forward, like how was that kind of playing both sports in college?
I joke with people now that, like, you know, I just had a very different college experience that like than most, and then definitely even more so than just regular athletes. And that,
yeah.
You know, I'd wake up at 5, whatever season it was. If it was, let's hypothetically say it was off season for baseball, so it's the fall. You know, from 5 to 7, I'm satisfying the baseball team's off season workout regimen. Mm-hmm. You know, like a special workout and all that stuff. And then, you know, then I'd go through being a regular football player throughout the day. And that was just all day, every day. There was just no time to do anything fun, basically. In the spring, you know, I have a famous example of we had a Big Ten weekend versus Ohio State. And I actually ended up hitting a game-winning home run at like 3 p.m. for the baseball team. And then after the game, just got in my car and drove to the football stadium for the spring game. And we ended up winning, you know, my side won that. So, it, you know, stuff like that, where it's just like, there was no, that's all I did all the time. and then try to graduate, and then, you know, end up graduating from the business school there, which probably was maybe the most challenging of it all. Because, you know, it's just like, you know, it was one of the hardest degrees to get at IU. And, I even failed a class, I remember, sophomore year. And I remember the professor saying, like, this is for the best, because we can't have someone like you graduate from our school. Because, you know, you shouldn't be able to do that. You shouldn't be able to do two sports and do our school. And so he just didn't know who he was dealing with, because then I take, you know, I obviously just stayed for summer, because I had to stay for summer anyway. Yeah. Because of football. And I just took the class over, passed it, and then, you know, saw him at graduation, and, you know, it was basically like, how you like me now. So, yeah.
I guess, you know, like, what type of player were you baseball-wise? And then, like, kind of when did – I mean, obviously you got drafted in the NFL, but was there any, you know, thoughts of baseball at that point, or what did that look like?
Yeah, what I ended up becoming, and it's actually interesting because I did play Kuwait Little League, and the people that introduced baseball to Kuwait when I was there were the Japanese immigrants. It's not calling immigrants, basically. They were there for work, and a couple worked with my dad, and they were basically like, hey, we're starting this Kuwait Little League baseball thing. Why don't you come over? So it was a lot of that group of people were teaching us the sport. So it was all about contact and great defense and, you know, that kind of style of baseball. So honestly, I was a top tier defensive first baseman, albeit right-handed.
Yeah.
I'd hit high 300s, but I just lacked power, you know, and essentially started for three seasons there. And like I said, hit high 300s, but I think the max home run output was like 6 or 7. And I think most scouts were basically like, Jabron, I can't really call in a 6'5 right-handed first baseman that hits for high average and plays great defense. You know, like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa are hitting 70 home runs a season right now. Like, you can't really call that in. I was like, hey, I don't disagree. I actually was, you know, and then any of the camps I went to, or like the, I can't remember what baseball guys call them, but, you know, the Blue Jays had the Marlins would have like these, like a pre-draft workout or whatever. So I got invited to a couple of those, and I always went to catch, because like secretly, like I loved catching, and like framing was my jam. Like, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't watch that much sports anymore, but I think I saw something come across my timeline where it's like catchers framing these days. And it's like a totally like, you know, I'm not here to talk about lost arts or anything, but like definitely like that was my jam, was like framing. So it would always go the same. It would be like they'd see me catching and I'd catch this like, you know, guy throwing 95 or whatever and do it like easy. You know, and like great frame, great, you know, all that stuff. And like the scouts would be all over me, you know, throws down to second base. They're like, dude, you know, why didn't you catch in college, et cetera, et cetera. And then I just, you know, they throw me some off speed pitches or ask me to hit for power, and it just wouldn't happen in BP. And, you know, I think that the lack of experience of them seeing me catch in college and things, but, you know, if I went back and did it over again and wanted to continue a career in baseball, you know, I probably should have been behind the plate. but I guess my biggest, the thing I should say is that there were opportunities. So basically how my career was, I was like staggered. So my senior, because I redshirted in football, but did not redshirt in baseball. So my senior year of baseball, I had my fifth year of football coming up after it. Now, albeit I had only played in like one game my entire football career. I sat behind a guy named Antoine Randall-El. I wasn't projected to be the starting quarterback that upcoming season. There was somebody else that was in front of me, but I had that kind of like lingering over my head. And so I hadn't had a chance to really like play college football yet, and had put in a lot of work to do so. And so that senior year, I was a captain on the IU baseball team, and we made it to the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament. And I had a great tournament. Everything was, you know, we're doing great. We actually go up on Ohio State. And if we won, we would have gone to the championship game. We go up against Ohio State, and we're going to the bottom of the ninth. And Nick Swisher comes up to the plate with the bases loaded and Billy Beans in the front row. And Swisher was like just a natural, right? I mean, like, dude was just a natural. He's a first baseman for Ohio State, had the swagger, had everything. And like, I was the opposite of that. I had like no swagger, like didn't grow up around a baseball family. Like, I was like the worst swagger of all time. And so we had like a thing, Swisher and I, not that he like cared, but you know, you follow the position, your position on other teams. It's just like a natural thing to do. Yep. And so Swisher comes up, and I think his song was The Natural. You know, that's like what he walked up to. Sure enough, he walks up, bases loaded. They're down by three. He hits a home run, grand slam, to knock us out of the tournament. And as he's rounding first base, he literally looks at me and he's like, nice career. And I was like, bro, that's a professional baseball player right there that just ran by me. This is like a professional baseball player. And like, that's obviously, I'm not at that level, you know? So like, honestly, that just like ended. It was like, yo, why would I try to do baseball? This is what makes it to the major leagues, you know? And I was like, anytime anybody would ask me, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of like a rookie ball guy, probably like low single A. But I've seen a pro, and that's not me. You know, I could keep working my butt off. But like, I'll never be like that. A switch hitting swagger dude that, you know,
just different.
Baller. He's different, right? He's different. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, that was such a jerk thing of him to do. I'm like, no, that's like what first round pick professional ball players look like. That's like what they're like, you know? So it was a gift, actually. So, you know, I had a couple calls and stuff, but I was like, no, I'm going to go into my senior year in football and just roll the dice.
And then was that kind of it baseball wise, really? Or
yeah, that was it. That was it. You know, I didn't really explore it much after that.
Yeah. Well, and then kind of moving forward, like football wise though, like, could you talk to us a little bit briefly, just, you know, kind of your NFL career? And
yeah, I mean, essentially the nuts and bolts of it, I only played six games that season in college. Did basically what I did in high school, have a couple good games, have a couple really bad games. Yeah. Wasn't invited to the combine or anything, but the former Washington Redskins had Steve Spurrier as their head coach. And I was invited to the like pre-draft workout for them because I grew up around, you know, I grew up within 50 miles of their facility. And they only had three picks. They had a 2, a 3, a 7. And Byron Leftwich was also invited to that workout, but he didn't show up because he went to the combine. He was going to be a top round draft pick. So I was the only quarterback there. And I think they had like 200 prospects. Hmm. And so Spurrier called me in before the whole thing started. I couldn't pronounce my name, called me Gibron, and was basically like, you know, I've seen your film. I think you're actually pretty good. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I go out there and, you know, before you knew it, I looked like a Florida quarterback. I was holding the ball real high and things and had a great day. And I could always spin it.
You know, I mean, I could always throw it. And after the workout, the quarterback coach was like, I've never seen anything like this. Like, he's in love with you. I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I wasn't expecting to get drafted, obviously. And sure enough, draft comes around, seventh round. He calls me. He's like, I'm picking you, Gibby. You know, he started calling me Gibby. And that was kind of the start of my career. And I just had such a high ceiling football wise compared to baseball. Right. I mean, I just had so much more to grow into. And I had at the time, you know, some, the measurables that, you know, the pros liked, which was, you know, 6'4", and I could just sling it. You know, I mean, if you saw me throwing in warmups, people would be like, who is that? And so I think, I'm proud of my career. You know, I got six seasons in, never got a chance to start an NFL game. I was sent to NFL Europe three times, which was used to be the developmental league. I won an NFL Europe MVP there, threw for more yards than Kurt Warner. But I just never got the shot to play or at least a game or anything. And there's a lot there, right? I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. A lot of unsightly things were said and communicated at the time that my wife and I laugh would never fly these days. But, you know, that was a different time when different things were kind of going on. But yeah, that was my NFL career.
And then obviously with myself being from Canada, you ended up playing a little bit in the CFL or?
Well, at the end of my career, I basically, the Argonauts were going to bring up like a few NFL veteran quarterbacks and we fought it out for the starting job, so to speak. So it was me, Cleo Lemon and Ken Dorsey. I had just been married and I drove up there for training camp. And about, I think the third day, you know, there's an extra player up there in Canada on the field for each side. Yeah. And the field is different. And there's people running towards the line of scrimmage before the snap. And I was like, I looked at Ken and Cleo and I was like, guys, like, this is not the same thing. Like, this is total, like, I don't know what's going on, you know, and it's not a good feeling to hold the ball and like not know what's going on before the snap, because, you know, you come from the NFL. It's basically like, yo, like, I know coverages. I know this game so well, but like, I know it like the back of my hand. And I was just sitting there on the third day going like, you know, I think I know what I'm supposed to do, but I don't know it like I need to know it. And there's a game in like 2 weeks. So like whoever the starter is, you know.
Have fun.
Yeah. And so I quit. I literally walked in the next that evening. It was like, I think I had the media came up to me before I was done for the day. And I think I announced like in front of all the media, I was like, listen, I love it here in Toronto. Like, I've been dreaming about coming to Canada. I love this city because I spent some time in Buffalo. I was like, but I'm going into the coaches right now and telling them like I'm retiring because your game is so beautiful but different. And I can't, there's no way I can ramp up the speed and be good. And I probably was going to lose the spot anyway. I mean, I wasn't performing great. So I'm not trying to say it was because, you know, oh, I was going to, you know, it was just a group of things together that I was like, you know, I'm kind of done. So
that's fair. And then we kind of connected. I was doing some recruiting for the Pakistan last year for the WBC qualifier. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. You reached out to me and I didn't really know much about the program, but you got me in touch with them and I kind of, you know, told them that I'd be interested in playing for the qualifier if that was something they were interested in, and they were. So I started working out, and actually I contacted a couple friends, and actually one of them, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's a former NFL teammate of mine, knew somebody that knew Luis Gonzalez in Phoenix, where I was living at the time. And Luis Gonzalez was like the greatest guy ever, had me come over to his house. I was using his batting cage to get ready and like, you know, just getting ready for the tournament and really got into it, you know. went back to Indiana, and they were great. And I worked out there a little bit and was feeling pretty good, actually. I mean, I was, getting a lot of work in. And then I think there had been no talk about COVID anything from the organization or the league or anything. And I got COVID, like 10 days before the tourney.
Shoot.
And so essentially I wasn't going to pass their COVID protocols. And so, I didn't get to go or play, which kind of sucked. So,
any thoughts about trying again or keeping in shape or for a future one or?
Yeah, I'm staying in shape. I haven't had any communications with them specifically.
Gotcha.
I did, in fact, reach out to the Palestinian national team because my dad's from Palestine. Yeah. And so I saw that they're doing stuff, too. And so I texted their guy the other day and he got back to me. And it's super fascinating. I'm like super fascinated by what's going on. And obviously the Palestinian team with like everything that's going on in the world and things like the fact that they've got a baseball team right now is just like, it's just crazy. Cool. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So I'm a literal free agent, I guess is what you could say. I'm a 41 or 42 year old free agent at the moment.
And then just want to kind of ask you, obviously with playing both sports, like any similarities between the two? I know they're very completely different, but was there any similarities that you found or?
I think that the mentality that baseball teaches you in terms of like, the failure aspect and coming to grips with that, I think that correlates really well into the quarterback position. I think that also like the timing aspect of pitch recognition and stuff is like, actually there's like a lot of parallels between that and the quarterback position in terms of like quick decision-making and like things flashing in front of you. I think there are a lot of tight correlations in those two things with quarterbacking. But other than that, I think it's just competing and, I do think there's a lot of differences on a lot of cases, but that would be my two, opinions on that.
And then during your time, right, or in the NFL, like, have you gone to many like kind of MLB games or kind of stay in baseball through that way or?
Yeah. I mean, I've been to games. I actually ended up having a golf brand, a golf clothing line. And so a few baseball players fell in love with it and would be, buying the polo shirts. So anytime they'd come to town, like Jason Grilley used to be a customer, and he loved those polo shirts. So anytime he was in town with the Pirates, like he'd get me and my son, some tickets and stuff. Nice. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a gorgeous game to go watch and experience. And I actually think it's having, I think the Renaissance is coming, I think. I don't know if they've got it figured out yet, but I think, there's something there. And I hope the league keeps it going and they can find inroads to making it, continue to be an enjoyable experience without losing, the history and the thing. So, anytime the kids ask, I'm telling them about growing up watching the Braves team, and I could still go around the diamond and name all the players and, Maddox and Glavin and Smoltz and stuff. And that's the part that I think is magical about baseball that I think has been lost a little bit. But again, I'm not a expert by any means. Maybe that isn't the case, but anytime I kind of check in, it's just like players and teams and players and teams. And there's like a lot, the identity thing, that used to kind of be there is not anymore. And I think that's probably all pro sports at the moment.
That makes sense.
I can see that. I thought that was a really enjoyable part of sports. Probably my favorite part, is like, even if you look at that Braves team, like it was on a certain station. It had a certain commentator. If they came and said, let's replace Jeff Blauser, Bobby Cox is like, you can't replace Jeff Blauser. He's the shortstop, right? Like there's no, he's the guy. Yeah. You know, like, it's, you know, sure, he has deficiencies, but he's our shortstop, you know, like. And I think that, you know, maybe the rise of front offices and, you know, all that stuff, it's more about, you know, moving pieces and, you know, putting things together all the time. And, you know, as opposed to just like, yo, Terry Pendleton plays third for the Braves, you know, like Stant, you know, Fred McGriff, he's the first baseman, you know, and like I say the name Sid Bream, Andy Manslyke. You know, Barry Bonds, you're just like, oh my God, the Pirates. You know, there was like a real connection of like branding and storytelling and that kind of stuff. And it seems like in baseball in the last 5 years, the only way that's happened is like when the Astros got in trouble. Right. And then it was like Astros, troublemakers. I was like, oh, they're onto something. That's like a brand. That's like a story. That's like a, you know, and guess what? Like they would go to different parks and they'd get booed. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, in all honesty, that is the pro leagues that get it going and do a good job. That's kind of what ends up happening. And it's like, you know, football does it. And the thing football is going for it, American football, is like they all wear helmets. So the fans, like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters that Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback. But to, like, the majority of fans, the fourth running back on the Chiefs doesn't matter. Mm. You know? Really doesn't.
Yeah.
But in baseball, you see everybody's faces.
Yeah.
So, you know, you turn on the TV and you want to see, like,
that's Ohtani, Trout, right? And, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But even that, it's like they can't even – Ohtani and Trout, and you can't even say, like – you know, the whole conversation the second half of the season is like, Ohtani, Ohtani, where's he going? Where's he going? Like, it's just like, there's no Ohtani, Trout, Angels, this is it for like ever.
Yeah.
Which is how it felt with Ron Gant and David Justice and, you know, Javier Lopez. I'm here how many years later still rattling them off.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not many players that are going to probably play their whole season with one team anymore.
Well, you mean career?
Or career, yeah.
Yeah. No, and even still, yeah, I think that it's not the – to me, it's not about the players. It's just about a lack of development of that aspect of the sport, you know? It's just a – it's like a misunderstanding of how people – fall in love with something.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, it was kind of cool. Like the World Baseball Classic this year, though, was cool to see, and kind of, I think, you know, definitely, even just, you can't really script that final right any more better than Ohtani versus Trout. But I definitely think the game of baseball needed that tournament just to kind of show, like, internationally wise, and just, you know, hopefully that'll kind of stay. Obviously MLB, you know, the season, it is what it is. It can be a long season, but, you know, like a tournament like that, it just kind of hopefully brought baseball over the world.
Yeah, I think even the way you're describing it and the positive success that came from that tournament and what everybody comments on is obviously the how exciting the games are, you know, or the exciting matchups, you know. Yeah. And it's like that to me is great, you know, but you can't script how well the games go. And over a long season, that's not going to keep the fans engaged, because like the chances of, you know, 82 games or whatever being thrilling and wonderful is slim to none. So you just need to create those things. And that's what the World Baseball Classic kind of did. That was similar to what we're discussing about the Braves. It's like country, I don't care who the third baseman is, he's on that country, right? Like, he ain't going anywhere. That's like the only team he can play for.
Yeah.
You know? And like, on some level, there should be like, you know, how can you create that? How can you kind of foster that without, you know, getting into messing up with free agency and things of that nature, right? Where it's like, yeah. Even when you're watching I'm watching the Lakers show on HBO Max, right? Where it's like, sign Magic to a 25-year deal. You know, like now the 25-year deal in baseball is basically like, oh my God, look at how much money and like, you know, big, but like, no, like, yo, you're a Laker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You know, if that makes any sense. So I don't know. I don't, what do I know? I'm just saying that that's the part about baseball that like really drew me in. And I, you know, nothing like that is occurring in today's game, in my opinion. So.
Well, and I guess it's something I definitely always enjoyed tournaments more than a season. It's just, you know, you kind of a group of guys getting together for a couple of weeks and you never quite know what's going to happen, right? And I guess that's kind of the excitement, and the WBC has that advantage, right? Whereas a season, it can be a bit of a grind, obviously. And like you said, some of the games, obviously every game means something, but at the end of the day, 80th game in the season, yeah. A little bit tough to kind of get that same atmosphere as the WBC for sure.
Yeah.
And then it's just time for our ninth inning call to the bullpen. So just going to be some random questions just to learn a little bit more about you.
Okay.
favorite NHL team?
Hartford Whalers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because of the logo. It's like top five logo in the world of all time.
Yeah. Well, and then did you crossover and, you know, Carolina fan or
nope. just that logo, man. I mean, it's just magic. It's like magic in a bottle, and you know, and there's nothing to say about it other than it's awesome.
Favorite travel destination?
Oof. South New Zealand, Queenstown.
Nice. All-time favorite professional wrestler?
Ultimate Warrior.
Favorite baseball movie of all time?
Oh, my goodness. This one's hard.
It's very hard.
You know, I'm going to say this. I'm going to get, you know, For Love of the Game. I love For Love of the Game.
Yep. Yeah, it was a good one. And then these next three questions is just kind of like if you could, you know, go with anyone dead or alive. You know, the first one is just to an MLB baseball game.
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah. For a round of golf.
Gosh. Round of golf. I would say Rick Rubin.
And then just, you know, out to the bar, you know, just have a drink.
Out to the bar. Kanye West.
Yeah. And if you could be an Olympian in any sport, summer or winter, other than baseball, what sport would you like to do?
I would like to do track and field.
Yeah. Yeah, like the 100-meter sprint?
100-meter sprint, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always a fascinating event. Yeah. And then lastly, just going to test your teammates here, like on that 2001 Indiana team. Do you know the outfielder? I guess he's the only one on that team that made it to the big leagues, and he was an outfielder.
Ooh, this is your is this like a trick question? Because Kevin Mahar.
Well, that's yeah. That's,
Kevin
that's,
Mahar made it, right?
Yeah.
So Kevin Mahar made it. I played with Doug DeVore. I think Doug DeVore almost made it. He made it to the minors. And then we had a center fielder. I cannot believe I'm forgetting his name right now, but I think he had a cup of coffee. But Kevin Mahar definitely made it.
Yeah, absolutely. That,
that's I played with Kenny Mars. Kenny Mars is with the Tigers now. He's like a hitting instructor in the Tigers organization.
Nice.
And yeah.
Yeah, no, that was it, Kevin Mahar.
There you go.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you coming on. Is there any shout-outs before we sign off?
No, all good. Thanks for having me.
She said, do you come from a land down under? Where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover, yeah. You better run, you better take cover.